Omaha Public Radio presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. Today's guest speaker will be Father Timothy Lannon, the recently installed 24th president of Creighton University. The title of his talk will be Coming Home to Creighton. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, October 20th, 2011, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the speaker is Hugh Cowden, a member of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee.
Today we are privileged to have as our guest the Reverend Timothy Lannon of the Society of Jesus, who last July 1st became the 24th president of Creighton University. As a 1973 graduate of Creighton with a bachelor's degree in mathematics, he is the first Creighton University alumnus to head the university. While at Creighton, he was president of the Student Board of Governors and received the university's highest student honor, the Spirit of Creighton Award. Father Lannon holds two master's degrees from what is now the Boston College School of Theology and Ministry, and a doctorate in administration, planning, and social policy from the Graduate School of Education at Harvard University. In 1977, Father Lannon entered the Society of Jesus, and in 1986, he was ordained a priest at St. John's Church on the Creighton campus. He has taught at Marquette University High School, Marquette University, and Boston College, and from 1988 to 1995, he was president of Creighton Prep. During the last 8 years, Father Lannon has been president of St. Joseph's University in Philadelphia, and before that, he served as associate executive vice president and vice president for university advancement at Marquette University. He serves on the boards of Marquette University, Santa Clara University, Boston College, and the Association of Jesuit Colleges and Universities, of which he was chair from 2009 to 2011. He has studied, written, and presented on the topic of Catholic identity at American universities. Father Lannon is a native of Mason City, Iowa. The Omaha Press Club is honored to be able to help welcome back Father Timothy R. Lannon, S.J., the new president of Creighton University.
Thank you, Hugh, and I'm delighted to be here. And by the way, Hugh's a graduate of Marquette High, where I worked in the early 80s, and a graduate of Marquette University, where I worked 1999 through 2003, so nice to meet you today as well. I'm delighted to be here. It's a privilege to be here, as a matter of fact, and also very delighted to be back in Omaha, Nebraska. I was raised, as Hugh mentioned, in Mason City, Iowa, and there's Del Munson, who was a weatherman on Channel 3 in Mason City, Iowa. And I mentioned his forecasting was absolutely superb back in Mason City, and I'm sure superb here in Omaha as well. For me, though, having been raised in a town of 3,000 people was a great opportunity in many ways in attending the Catholic grade school and the Catholic high school there. But also, too, for me, coming to Creighton University as an undergraduate was a very, very changing, life-changing experience. In particular, I learned to think a little differently. Also, I learned to view myself a little differently and to view God differently and to view others differently. So in many ways, stretched intellectually, but also stretched emotionally and spiritually while being a student at Creighton University. And now being back, I'm delighted to be back for a lot of reasons, and being back in Omaha. In fact, I was president of Creighton Prep from 1988 through 1995, and I think my third or fourth year at Creighton Prep, the trustees of the board said, we'd like to send you to a golf school, because my game is actually terrible. Any golfers in the room? Any good golfers in the room? So, John. Well, I was sent to a golf school. I contacted some other Jesuit friends, and I said, would you guys like to go to a golf school? So three of us went. All three of us were high school presidents. All three were Jesuits. And we're outside of Tampa in a group of six people. And the pro knew that the three of us were Jesuits. And so the first day we were there, in the morning, we're on the driving range. He said, just hit the ball. I just want to watch your swing. And so he's watching the swings, and he came over to the three of us, and he said, what is wrong with you three? I said, what do you mean? He goes, your swings, they're violent, violent, violent. And I said to him, if you've been celibate as long as we've been celibate, you just want to kill that golf ball. Well, just a couple things in terms of what we're doing at Creighton University. One is the Business Ethics Alliance, and some of you might be involved with that, being led by others, but including being led by Tony Hendrickson, the dean of the College of Business Administration. The Modges Clinic, run by Creighton Medical students at Santa Francis House, and Dr. Rowan Zetterman, the dean of our School of Medicine, is with us today as well. The Creighton Center for Service and Justice, students volunteering all over the city but also all over the country, and Father Andy Alexander has the oversight for that area. Project Homeless Connect, as well as many other other areas. So I'm delighted by the many things that we do at Creighton. And also, too, if I may, just to take a minute to ask all of my colleagues from Creighton to please stand and be welcomed by all of you. Well, with that, let me just run through this presentation. And as Hugh mentioned, and he told me as well, that there might be some questions, which I'd be happy to answer. So the impact that we have in the community, as you can see, $47 million in terms of charity care for our patients. And that's so much a part of our mission at Creighton University. And also, to the brain gain, more and more of our students are coming from outside the state of Nebraska. So you can see 62% of our students are from outside the state. And then look how we populate the state, though, in terms of the percentages of physicians, dentists, pharmacists, and OT people in the state of Nebraska. The 13th largest employer in Omaha, we've got 3,023 employees at Creighton University, as well as our impact on the state's economy is more than $787 million, so a tremendous economic impact and benefit to Omaha and certainly to Nebraska. Record enrollment this year of 7,730 students. There is no place like Creighton. There is no school like Creighton in terms of our size, and I would describe us as being a mid-sized school. Some might say small, but mid-sized at 7,700. 9 schools and colleges. 3 million square feet. It's remarkable. And what's called a comprehensive university, a category developed by Carnegie. So in terms of not being a research university like UNL or among the Jesuit schools, Georgetown and Boston College, but a comprehensive university in terms of a commitment to undergraduate education, but in addition to the graduate programs and also our professional programs. And then, of course, some of the programs we do offer that are taking advantage of the uniqueness and diversity of Creighton University. Now, if you remember anything, and no offense to our friends from UNL or UNO, but there's no question about it, when it comes to undergraduates, we have the best students in the state. No one comes close to us. And so we use our own data as well as the data from UNO and UNL. But for example, the percentage of ranking, 5%, top 10%, and as you know, it's an even field when you compare the ACT scores. And so in terms of scoring the top 13%, over half of the members of the freshman class are in that category, 54.7 compared to 18.9 at UNO and 36.8 at the University of Nebraska at Lincoln. And so in many ways, I think that is an impressive number and one that suggests strongly, I would say, the quality of our students. And there's a question I try to ask myself every day: what more can we do at Creighton to improve the experience of our students and the care of our patients? And we're blessed with outstanding students. And I think if you ask the deans that are here today about the quality of our students and the interaction that occurs in our classrooms, it's absolutely remarkable. And what I love about our students in so many ways, they are, for the most part, I would say, intellectually curious, which you would expect that from college students, but you don't quite have that all the time. And I think in many ways our students are very curious intellectually inside and outside the classroom. National recognition. Now, if you do well in the rankings, you brag about it. If you don't do well, you don't talk about it. But I've been delighted by the trend that Creighton's enjoyed. And, of course, that's been possible with my colleagues that are here with us and others that have currently there and have gone before us. But a tremendous salute to Creighton in terms of the outstanding education that we provide for our students. And, of course, our involvement with service learning courses and honored for that along with Stanford, Duke, and Ohio State. I would say that Stanford, Duke, and Ohio State are in very good company being with Creighton University. And then Forbes, looking at 650 of the best schools in the country. Right now, maybe higher than this with the for-profits, right now there are about 3,200 institutions of higher education in the United States. And so Forbes took a look at the top 650 and put us at 171. Washington Monthly, number one. So a lot of accolades for Creighton University, and again, for good reason, I would say. Looking forward, oftentimes, and this is only my third month at the university, oftentimes people ask me, what's my vision for Creighton University? And at this time, I don't want to espouse a vision. It's too early. And I'm taking the time that I have been doing the last couple of months just listening to colleagues there, our faculty, our staff, our students, just listening to them talking about Creighton and what their view is about Creighton and their vision for Creighton. And eventually I will, and we will, espouse a vision for Creighton. But one thing is clear about Creighton, it's on the momentum. It'll continue being on the momentum, a wonderful momentum for us at the university. Strengthen our partnerships. We have plenty of partners, and we're delighted by our partnerships, but we need to strengthen our partnership, especially with our neighbors. With our location, we must bring about an even stronger partnership with North Omaha and with South Omaha. And to be able to provide what I consider world-class education for young men and women that live within a mile or 2 miles of our university. And that's the partnership that I'm talking about. That's where we need to get more fully one of these days. And a unifying force for good. In many ways, we're a bridge for a lot of people, and we continue to be that bridge. But our values are so strong, and we espouse them all the time in terms of being a Catholic Jesuit university and what we stand for. And I think, too, as you know, we're in the business of educating our students, but more importantly, we're in the business of transforming our students, whether an undergraduate or in the graduate school or in our professional schools. Dr. Zetterman, for one, the dean of our School of Medicine, has always said, and often, how our medical students are really challenged by and they embrace in turn the Jesuit values, and that is so important. And so these physicians, our graduates, will be well-educated, as our dentists, our undergraduates, well-educated, but viewing the world a little differently, as I experienced as an undergrad at Creighton University. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
How would you describe your management style?
My nickname at St. Joseph's was Father Now. That's a great question. I think in particular what I try to do, I think as a leader, especially as a CEO, a number of things are required, and I'm greatly influenced by James Collins. You have to have a great team, and we've got a great team at Creighton, but you've got to have a great team of leaders to make things happen. The second is to espouse a vision, which I've not done yet, as I mentioned. The third is to build a plan behind that vision. And the fourth or fifth is to put the resources to support that plan. So when it comes to my leadership style, basically what I do is I have colleagues that report directly to me with a set of goals that they've got to achieve and to watch those goals, and I help them form those goals. I rarely dig deep into the weeds. My position is to inspire, to lead others to come to their fullest potential as leaders. I demand a lot of myself, and I demand a lot of my colleagues. But my leadership style is have the best people and let them run to do the things they know how to do best.
Would you clarify the statement, all Jesuits are Catholic, however, not all Catholics are Jesuits?
I like that question. All Jesuits are Catholic, but not all Catholics are Jesuits. Yeah. So the Jesuits is a religious order in the Catholic Church, and we're a religious community. So after 2 years in the novitiate, we profess vows of poverty, obedience, and chastity. And what I love about the Jesuits is the gift that St. Ignatius, the founder of the Jesuits, gave to the Jesuits and to the Church and to really all Christians, and that's the spiritual exercise of St. Ignatius. And so it's through that experience of the exercises that all of us as Jesuits develop this particular spirituality where we're led to find God in all things. And as you may know, or some of you know this, the Jesuits were the first order to live outside a monastery or an abbey. And the founder wanted to make sure that we're with and among the people, but also to make sure that we had the spirituality or prayer life. And it's through the exercises that we develop that prayer life. And so in many ways, to answer the question succinctly, the Jesuit order or Jesuits are a religious order in the Catholic Church and the largest order in the Catholic Church. Now, one thing about being a Jesuit, what I love about the Jesuits, I must say, is that and I'm a little jaded here. There's no better training in the world. The first 2 years, as I mentioned, the novitiate is really a house of prayer to learn how to pray, but also two experiences in the case, my case, and probably Andy's as well, emptying bedpans, mopping floors, and today being a college president. So a tremendous opportunity for growth and being challenged as a person studying the Jesuits.
Can you be more specific regarding working with residents of North and South Omaha?
I want to be careful about answering that question, but here's my response to that. A lot of efforts have been done in terms of providing a solid education for our citizens. And yet, as we know, OPS is a fine system, but there's a lot of challenges socially and economically for a lot of the families facing poverty in the city. And there's been some great leadership. Susie Buffett, as well as Mike and Galliani, have done a great job in terms of helping to prepare kids for high school and college. We did develop a program at St. Joseph's University where we targeted two or three schools in North Philadelphia and also in Camden, New Jersey, and started working with those young kids at the age of 8, 9, and 10 through high school, and ideally landing them at St. Joseph's University. So too, I'd like to do the same thing at Creighton University, to begin to identify, as we've got some programs already, but to strengthen these programs, to begin to identify kids in the third and fourth grade, work with them, work with their parents or guardians, and get them through grade school, get them through high school, and land them ideally at Creighton or some other school. And in doing so, that would require on our part resources to cover their tuition, especially if they go to a private grade school and high school, and for Creighton, resources to have the staff on hand to work with these families, because these kids will be most likely first-generation kids going to college, and they don't know the process of preparing for college. They don't know the process for financial aid. They don't know the process for getting ready for the ACT exam. So it would be something like that I have in mind.
What differences do you see in today's students compared to your early days on campus?
All I got to say is I'm glad I'm 60 and not 18. And I guess I think I heard my parents say the same thing. Today's students are absolutely wonderful people. I think a big difference between my time and today, at least at Creighton, there's a greater consciousness on the part of our students in terms of serving the needs of others. There's a greater realization on their part, how privileged they are, and in turn led by their own values and certainly the values at Creighton University, led to serve the needs of others. And so there's a consciousness of seeing the world a little more attentively and responding to it. I think the students today are very bright, but there's another issue too that's a huge difference, and we all know this. Students today are very savvy when it comes to technology and very connected. And so a concern I have about today's students, they're so connected to technology that in many ways I think they won't have the experience that we had as young kids with eyeball to eyeball, spending a lot of time with friends in terms of something like this, where it's texting, it's the phone calls, it's email, it's listening to the music on their iPod or on their iPhone. And so I think that's another big difference. Lastly, I would say this, and I need to be careful about this, but there's research to back this up done by UCLA. Today's students compared to our time, or my time, are much more spiritual. But today's students are less inclined to be part of an organized church than during our time. And so I find that very interesting, is this desire to have some type of prayer life or spiritual life, and yet also a decision made by a number of students that they don't want to be part of an organized church. And I think that's, again, the research shows that from the study from UCLA.
Do you see any more eastern expansion of the Creighton campus?
Well, we'll seize every opportunity that we can. But I want to be careful about that, because there might be some real estate people in here thinking that they've got an opportunity. Here's my read on this. I think we need to be very careful with further expansion, and I know that might disappoint some people. We have, as I mentioned earlier, we have 3 million square feet. That's a huge overhead for us. And we talked about, through the leadership of Tony Hendrickson, we talked about building a new building for the College of Business Administration. The price tag of that building was $35 million. To operate that building would be $1 million. And so right now we're doing a study on our campus, repurposing a portion of the Harper Center, which is our most beautiful building on the campus, to repurpose a portion of that building to become the new home of the College of Business Administration. So I'm more inclined to take a look at our current infrastructure and how to use that infrastructure better. And I think also it's a responsible use of our resources. Now, Mark Lattis here, the dean of our dental school, he wants a new building for a school of dentistry. And so he hasn't brought it up, but I brought it up to kind of cut him off before he could mention it back to me. But so there are these demands, but at the same time, we need to find opportunities that can stretch our dollars farther. As president of St. Joseph's University in Philadelphia, we added 38 acres of land and spent hundreds of millions of dollars on new buildings. In many ways, I think those days have to slow down a bit, especially for private higher education. So for us at Creighton, I think, at least on my part, I want to get more and more familiar with what our needs are, what our opportunities are, what the capacity of our current space is. But bottom line, though, too, as I mentioned, if there's an opportunity to build or expand that would be beneficial to our mission, we will do that.
You taught at Marquette High School. I got my diploma there long before you were there. You taught at Marquette University, and I have 2 degrees from there. So I have a series of questions of my own. Are you ready?
Sure, I think so.
Okay.
Is the bar still open?
Sure. How is it that Creighton has been able to successfully operate a medical school while none of the other Jesuit colleges around the country have been able to do so?
There are actually four Jesuit schools that have medical schools. It's Creighton University, it's Georgetown University, Loyola Chicago, and St. Louis University. And there's a fifth Catholic school, I think, in Long Island. Do you know, Rowan, is there a Catholic medical school in Long Island?
No, it was in Westchester County, and they just sold it a year ago. It was part of the change of the diocese.
So no longer Catholic. So then that does mean only four Jesuit medical schools. Well, one thing about that. We've had a medical school for 100 years. We'll have a medical school for another 100 years. There's an absolute need for Catholic universities to be operating medical schools, not only for training physicians, as I've mentioned, but also training them with the values that we espouse as an institution and also as a medical school, the Jesuit values, but also to being clear with our students, although they may not be Catholic, but being clear with our students the position of the Catholic Church. And in our clinics, observing and upholding those positions with our clinics and with our hospital. How can we do it? Well, we can do it because of a great faculty, but we've got some challenges, and Dr. Zimmerman can address this. We've got some challenges, everybody does in healthcare. The biggest challenge, I think, is to have a good share of the healthcare market, and we've had some diminishment on our part with that share. So we need to find some opportunities to continue to look to increasing our share of the healthcare market. Because when it comes to the medical center and when it comes to our physicians, absolutely outstanding. Our challenges are not unique to us. They're in general about most medical schools and academic medical centers. And we always need to be in conversation with our partner today, who's Tenet. We also have, I think, about 40-plus agreements with Allegiant. We've got joint residency programs with Nebraska. But it is unusual for a city this size to have two medical schools. But Creighton and UNMC, I'm sure, will be around for another 100 years. We're here to stay, and we're very proud. I'm very proud of our medical school. But it takes leadership and hard work, especially to make the finances work today. And we're going after it as best we can. And I don't want to say too much about this, but and Dr. Zimmerman can say more. But we had a survey team just with us the last 3 days looking at our operations, and they're part of the accrediting body for medical schools. And although they were careful what they said to us, all of us were quite excited about the response. And normally, as Dr. Zimmerman knows, normally they follow a script, and they did. But in the beginning, they went off script. and raved about what they heard from our students and how much our students love this medical school and how our faculty are meeting these students and their needs. I don't think any student complained at all, which is remarkable, especially if I may say so for med students.
As a member and former chair of the Association of Jesuit Colleges and Universities, can you talk about the future of Jesuit higher education in the United States? For example, do some Jesuit universities now have lay presidents? And if so, how many?
Yeah, I spent 3 years as chair of this group, and it's 28 schools. So there are 28 Jesuit colleges and universities in the United States. We're mostly located in large cities. We're not well-positioned in the Southeast and the Southwest because certainly in the building of this nation, the Jesuits, mostly from Europe, and then, of course, native Jesuits began to grow as well here in the country. But we migrated toward the big cities, and so we're very heavily involved in the Northeast and California. Of the 28 Jesuit schools, 10 are being led today by non-Jesuits. And that number will continue to increase. In the Society of Jesus, there's a diminishing number of men joining the Jesuits. I must say that the quality, if I may say so, the quality is excellent. I mean, some of these men joining us are absolutely superb. And my favorite story, if I may digress for a minute, my favorite story is that we've got a young man in the Jesuits, I think in his third or fourth year, finished first in his class at Notre Dame, gave the valedictorian speech at Notre Dame, and I wish I could have been in the rec room while the Holy Cross priests and brothers were having cocktails when they first found out this guy is joining the Jesuits and not the priests of the Holy Cross. So, but the quality's there, but the number is not there. And so there's most schools need to prepare for, especially those schools that have a Jesuit president, and that includes us, need to prepare for the day there will not be a Jesuit as president. But the good news about our schools is this, and I mentioned this earlier, the greatest gift that St. Ignatius gave to the Jesuits and to the church and to Christians is a spiritual exercise of St. Ignatius. And again, that's a retreat where you develop a particular spirituality, and Andy Alexander, Father Alexander, has been very involved with this on our campus. A number of our lay colleagues at Creighton have made or are making those retreats. A number of our lay colleagues are directing people making these retreats. And so there's this growing critical mass of men and women at Creighton University, as well as St. Joseph's in Philadelphia or Georgetown in D.C., who have experienced this kind of retreat, who have developed this kind of spirituality, who have, in a sense, the same worldview that Jesuits have through their own experience of the spiritual exercises. And those will be the men and women and generations behind them that will take more and more responsibility for our schools. And so of the 220 Catholic colleges and universities in the United States, I am absolutely convinced that the 28 Jesuit schools will remain Jesuit, but it will be a little different look than what it was today or when I was a kid at Creighton in the 70s.
You can say no comment to any of these.
Now you tell me. These are your questions, aren't they?
Yeah. You have degrees from both Creighton University and Harvard. If you had a child, and that child received scholarships from both Harvard and Creighton, where would you advise her or him to go, and why?
That's an easy question. Undergraduate Creighton, graduate Harvard. How's that? Yeah. I think, you know, Harvard, I loved it there. And, in fact, I went back to graduate school at the age of 44. And as you may know or may not know about the Jesuits, we don't control our lives. It's a provincial religious superior. In our case, it's a Marquette High grad. That's a provincial who I knew when he was 15 years old back at Marquette High. He was a sophomore when I arrived there in 1980. And so the provincial makes the decision. But when I went back to school at the age of 44 and to Harvard, the first couple of months, I didn't think I had the brain power. I mean, I was in a cohort of 22 people, many of whom had degrees from Harvard College, Stanford, Brown, Princeton. And then I had my degree from what we called Creighton, when I was a student at Creighton, the Harvard of the Midwest, by the way, back in the 70s. Well, I learned that I could compete quite well with all of them. And not quite well, but very well against them, so to speak. So Also, too, my observation about Harvard College, the undergraduate program, I mean, there's no better way to be connected than to be at Harvard College or Princeton or Dartmouth in terms of the power that's really embedded in these institutions. But it was not, I don't think, watching the undergrads a normal experience, what I would consider a normal experience of an undergraduate education. So I'm glad I went to Creighton, and I would, if I had any children, they would probably, well, for sure, they would go to a Jesuit university or college for undergraduate education, and ideally to Creighton.
How would the major challenges concerning St. Joseph's University and Creighton measure up? That is, are the strengths and weaknesses that you found at St. Joseph's similar or different from those that you find at Creighton?
That is a great question. I think a couple things. One is it's more challenging being president of Creighton than it is of St. Joseph's University. St. Joseph's University is larger by 1,000 students, but not as diverse as Creighton. So St. Joseph's has the College of Arts and Sciences, the Hobb School of Business, and then a university college for adult learners. As I mentioned, as you know, we have 9 schools, and so Creighton is much more diverse and much more challenging. The operating budget at Creighton is twice that than St. Joseph's. Our operating budget is like $400 million. And, of course, with the patient care, that's a whole new dimension that I've got to learn about, and I'm being well mentored by my colleagues. So there's a huge difference between the two institutions. But at the same time, it's always the same challenges, to be honest. The challenges are to make sure the quality of the program is excellent. The challenge is to make sure you've got the resources to support the programs. The challenge is how much more additional resources can you find for new programs. But I must say, though, too, the neighbors here are much nicer than they are in Philadelphia. I'll tell you, we had some big fights back at St. Joseph's that cost us a lot of money. So that's made a big difference as well. So a lot of similarities, but the Creighton difference is it's much more demanding, I think, from my experience being president of Creighton.
I have a question here that I'll ask in a little bit about neighbors. But first of all, we're standing here in the press club, so I have to ask you this question. Did you have any problems with the student press at St. Joseph's? And if so, what were they and how did you handle them?
I hope the Creightonian staff is not going to listen to this broadcast. There's just a whole different way of proceeding here than there is back east. Back east, it's a much more aggressive style, much more confrontive. And so were there some challenges with the student newspaper and me? Yes. And the challenges weren't so much that they were calling for my head by any means, but they always seemed to be looking more – they always seemed to be talking more about those things that would be negative rather than those things that were positive. So always kind of looking for negative things. I was really pleased, though. I was upset a couple times, but I must tell you, I forgive them for everything because when I left, there was a beautiful editorial commenting about my leadership and the changes there. At the Creightonian, they're terrific, and I've been available to the staff. And so far, they've been very kind, but I'm sure that they might have some disagreements as I go forward with my leadership as president.
A new basketball season is fast approaching. Do you have any words of wisdom for the team? Any predictions? Did you play any sports when you were in school?
Jeez, Hugh, that's like 5 questions. I don't think I can. Well, let me just give you a little background. When I was at Marquette, my last year at Marquette was 2002-2003, and Marquette went to the Final Four. My first year at St. Joseph's, which is 2003-2004, St. Joseph's went to the Elite Eight. This is my first year at Creighton. Now, I don't want to put any pressure on Greg McDermott, but I got to tell you, there is a buzz about this team. And I don't know if you saw today's paper. There is a buzz where we've been mentioned a couple times to be in the top 25. Frankly, I don't want to be in the top 25 in the beginning. But I think we've got a very good team. I was at Midnight Madness on Friday night, and again, I don't know the team that well yet. But I was thinking to myself, this team has got everything needed to be a great team in terms of the players we have, their gifts and talents, and the coaching staff we have. And so no predictions, except there's only one request I've made to the coach, and that is we must beat St. Joseph's University on December 10th in Philadelphia, because we're now in our second home and home, and right now my record is 0-3. So Creighton has beat St. Joseph's three times, and I'll tell you, if St. Joseph beats us, I'll be furious.
I'm glad I asked. Since you have studied, written, and presented papers on the topic of Catholic identity at American universities, can you share some of your thoughts on that? I assume you are referring to public as well as Catholic universities.
No, the research was really on Jesuit universities, and the research question was how do presidents of Jesuit universities promote Catholic identity? And the issue, I think, for any Catholic university, including Creighton University, is how do you live out the values of the Roman Catholic Church and yet at the same time be a university? And I think for us at Creighton, and certainly it was true at St. Joseph's, and I think at all Jesuit schools, we need to be a university first. That is, we need to allow conversations to take place, debate to take place, dialogue to take place that might be controversial, but is part of the conversation in the larger culture. At the same time, though, we need to be very clear about our position as a Roman Catholic and Jesuit university, that we do stand for the positions of the Church. We do embrace those positions. We do promote those positions. But since we are an academic institution, there'll be conversations about those positions among our faculty and among our students. And I would never want to curtail those conversations, because what better place to have those conversations than a Catholic university? What better place to inform our students about the position of the Church? But that's the great thing about being a young adult. And it's a challenging thing as well, that as young adults, and it was my own experience as a kid at Creighton, as a young adult, I needed to decide whether to accept my parents' faith as my own and to accept the values that they had as my own. And I chose to do that. And I went through a process where I was not, well, basically I went through a process where I thought, I don't believe that stuff. And that was so important, because in terms of disregarding it, I had kind of, a clean slate to figure out what I thought, what I believed, and I returned to those values and beliefs, and I've made them my own. And this is where college presidents get in trouble. When I was at St. Joseph's, there were some issues there, and I could have some days where I'd have 1,000 emails because people are very upset about something that took place. But again, there's no better place to debate issues that are controversial, part of the conversation of the larger culture, than a Catholic university, where in turn we can be clear about the positions of the Church and try to influence our students, but they need to make that decision. And they need to go through a process of incorporating those values as their own.
That's as good an answer as I've ever heard to that question. You led a successful fundraising campaign at St. Joseph's University. Do you consider yourself a good fundraiser? And who heads the Office of Development now?
Actually, the first place I learned to raise money was Creighton Prep. Are there any doctors in the crowd? Well, my first ask was from a doctor. Oh, yeah, Chris Rowan. I won't go there. I'm going to change my mind on that comment. Well, you said it. I love to ask people to partner, whether it's St. Joseph's, Creighton Prep, and now Creighton University, to ask people to partner with us to really change the lives of students and the care of patients. And so for me, it's very easy to ask for that help. And if I'm told no, I take no as a delayed yes, because there's got to be a way to find a way for that person to partner with us. And that way may mean that we asked for too much or didn't ask for the right thing. And so I love actually raising money. And right now we've got an interim vice president of university relations. Actually, it's two vice presidents, and Kim Manning and Laura Simic.
What percentage of Creighton students are on scholarship?
90% of our undergraduates are receiving some type of financial assistance, and that includes those students that are receiving a merit scholarship and also those students that might be receiving merit and or need. In the professional schools, it's a much smaller number, and then in the graduate program, it's also a smaller number. But in terms of undergraduate, it's 90% of our students. And overall, we provide $70 million in institutional money for tuition assistance through all the schools and colleges.
What would you consider to be Creighton's biggest challenge right now?
I'd say for private schools in general and for Creighton in particular, it's affordability. I think it's the best investment a family can make, but it's also an immense investment. Our tuition this year is just for undergraduates is just under $31,000. And so total cost is about $39,000, I think. I'm just checking to. So that's the biggest challenge. And so in turn for us, what that means is that we need to continue even raising more dollars for tuition assistance for our students. I want to make sure that for any qualified student to be admitted to Creighton, that student can afford to come to Creighton. And so we've got to find ways to get additional resources. So that is the biggest challenge, I think, for Creighton and in general for private higher ed and in some ways for public higher ed as well.
This is back to neighbors. Is a partnership possible between Creighton University, a Catholic institution, and Omaha Public Schools, a secular institution? They are next-door neighbors.
I don't think there's any problem there. And we might have some partnerships with OPS. I don't know if we do or not. So we're adopting some OPS schools. So with my colleague's help, we are partnering already with OPS, and I think we have a responsibility. Even though there might be differences in values, the mission is still the same. That is educating young men and women, and any part that we can play in helping to prepare, especially students in OPS schools for a college education experience, I think the more we should be involved to make that happen or help make that happen.
What are your connections with the Jesuit Middle School in North Omaha, I think now called the Academy? It's a great program and makes a tremendous difference with the youth that they serve.
If I may say so, the Jesuit Academy, which is based on the Nativity Middle School model that the Jesuits developed way back, that's been adopted by other religious orders as well as other groups, is the right model right now, especially for those kids economically disadvantaged. This program, as you know, has the kids there during the regular school hours and beyond the school hours. This program also has those kids out in a camp now for 3 or 4 weeks. And so there is this constant attention. God bless you. There's this constant attention to the needs of these students and also to provide for them an environment that's conducive for good learning. So the founder was Father Jim Maholsky, who did a great job. The new president is Tom Nieske, Father Nieske. He's done a terrific job, and I think you'll see even better and greater things coming out of the Jesuit Academy. Now, I must say, though, too, I'm disappointed that the Cristo Rey School has been closed. I think that's really unfortunate for Omaha, and there was an attempt to develop a Cristo Rey School in Philadelphia, which is the fifth largest city in the country with 1.5 million Catholics in the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. And Philadelphia has not achieved yet a Cristo Rey School, and there's a more urgent need there than here for a school like that. So I think it's one of the best things that's happened for those kids here in Omaha.
How will the Obama health care plan affect the Creighton Medical School?
I might need Rowan's help on this, but I think if it goes as proposed by the president, we'll do very well. But my bets are that it's not going to be implemented. Are you done yet?
Almost. Could you comment on the rumor that Creighton is going to reinstitute football and join the Big 12?
That's a special announcement today. That rumor is true. And Jim Jansen is going to be our coach for the football team. And You know, when I was at Marquette, they had football like Creighton did. When I was at Marquette, and my job there was a vice president for advancement, and the question was asked, what about football? And so the president told me, anytime you ask that question, to say, we'll have football if you can write a check for $50 million. So if there's anyone that can write a check today for $50 million, we'll have football at Creighton.
We're out of time.
Good.
I want to thank Father Lannan for spending the time with us today as he embarks on his new position as Creighton University's new president. The Omaha Press Club wishes him all the best. I also want to thank our Press Club audience for their excellent questions, and our thanks as well to our KIOS radio audience. I want to extend a large vote of thanks to Joni Ballion for putting this forum together. Your work was much appreciated, Joni. We are adjourned.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. We've heard a talk by Father Timothy Lannan, the recently installed 24th president of Creighton University. The title of his talk was Coming Home to Creighton. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, October 20th, 2011, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club presents these noontime educational forums each month. The next program will be Thursday, November 17th at 12 noon. At that time, the guest speaker will be Carlos Morales, the Bicycle Pedestrian Coordinator for the City of Omaha. If you'd like to attend this or other future programs in the series, call the Omaha Press Club at 402-345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge, in downtown Omaha. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.